Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1949 that a famous musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein debuted on Broadway. So what was the name of that Broadway hit? Was it A, Oklahoma, B, The Sound of Music, C, South Pacific, or D, The King and I? So, a musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein debuted on this very day in 49. What was it called? And question number two. It was on this day back in 1985 that an estimated 5,000 radio stations around the world simultaneously played the same song. Why? Was it A, to draw attention to the need for aid to farmers worldwide? Was it B, to officially acknowledge the end of the Vietnam War? Was it C, to highlight the need for world cooperation in solving hunger problems in Africa? Or was it D, to celebrate the tearing down of the Berlin Wall? Hint, here's a snippet from the song that was played worldwide back in 1985.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on.
1985, worldwide radio broadcast of this song. Why? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program.
God's great big family,
and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April the 5th. Well, it was on this day back in 1962 that the Russian newspaper Pravda warned youths about the dangers of twisting. As noted in gospelroots.org, while Hank Ballard is credited as the songwriter, the song's origins are in gospel music. Gospel singer and guitarist Joseph Jojo Wallace had the original idea for a song with the lyrics, "Come on, baby, let's do the twist," based on a dance he remembered his sister doing as a child in his native North Carolina. Dick Clark promoted the twist on American Bandstand in the summer of 1960. By 1962, the Russians were complaining about the corrupting influences of Western music and dances and began warning teenagers in the USSR about the dangers of twisting. And it was 36 years ago today, 1983, that the U.S. Interior Secretary James Watt banned the Beach Boys from the 4th of July celebrations on the Washington Mall. Watt said rock and roll bands attract the, quote-unquote, wrong element. As noted in Entertainment Weekly, Watt unabashedly announced that all rock bands attracted the, quote-unquote, wrong element, and opted for a wholesome program with Wayne Newton instead. "We're not going to encourage drug abuse and alcoholism," Watt sniffed, "as was done in the past." The aging but perpetually upbeat Beach Boys, who had played at previous Fourth celebrations, insisted that they were wholesome. Mike Love cracked, "We sing about patriotic themes like Surfing USA." To his amazement, Watt found himself overnight not just controversial, but the most reviled man in Washington. The White House was swamped with protesting phone calls, and even Nancy Reagan called Watt on the carpet, saying she herself was a Beach Boys mega fan. Watt admits now that he hadn't even heard of the Beach Boys at the time. He said, "If it wasn't Amazing Grace or the Star Spangled Banner, I didn't recognize this song."
We all say that we'll quit someday. When a ship comes in, we'll just sail away. We'll just blow the smoke.
Casey Musgraves here, Blowin' Smoke, introduces our country music news. It's an article written by Ann Douglas Williams, published on the 11th of April, 2016, in the OdysseyOnline.com, entitled 10 Songs with the Coolest Backstories. Music gives a certain style to life that nothing else can seem to capture. It captivates souls and encourages people to really be who they are. All of the things music does through starts with the writer, the person who picks up the pen in the middle of the night and writes until the song is beautiful and perfect. Recently, I've come across several songs that I've really found to be cool backstories, probably a million favorite songs, so once I've listened to them enough, I often research the heck out of them to see what the writer was feeling when he, she wrote it to produce such a powerful impact on listeners. These are my favorites, and coming in at number 5, Follow Your Arrow by Casey Musgraves, the singer in the background now. Casey definitely wins the title of country girl badass. She has an air about her that seems to say, "I couldn't care less what you think of me. It's so freeing." Follow Your Arrow seems to shrug its shoulders in almost an existential manner, encouraging the freedom of choices and going after whatever you want. She wrote the song in the form of a poem for her friend who was going off to a foreign country for a while. She gave her an arrow necklace in the poem and sent her on her way, then later developed the song into something deeper and more entertaining for her audience.
Hey, I'm just blowing.
So, with hope that the worst of winter has now left us, we have Vivaldi's Spring Concerto from the Four Seasons introducing today's classical music news. It's an article written by Betsy Schwarm, published in Encyclopedia Britannica, entitled The Four Seasons, Work by Vivaldi. The Four Seasons is a group of four violin concerti by Italian composer Antonio Vivaldi, each of which gives a musical expression to a season of the year. They were written in about 1720. The Four Seasons is the best known of Vivaldi's work. Unusually for the time, Vivaldi published the concerti with accompanying poems, possibly even written by Vivaldi himself, that elucidated what it was about those seasons that his music was intended to evoke. It provides one of the earliest and most detailed examples of what was later called program music, music with a narrative element. Vivaldi took great pains to relate his music to the texts of the poems, translating the poetic lines themselves directly into the music on the page. Other natural occurrences are similarly evoked, as the one in the spring is. Vivaldi separated each concerto into three movements, fast, slow, fast, and likewise each linked sonnet into three sections. The sonnet for his spring concerto number 1 in E major is as follows. Spring has arrived with joy, welcomed by the birds with happy songs, and the brooks amidst gentle breezes murmur sweetly as they flow. The sky is capped in black, and thunder and lightning herald a storm. When they fall silent, the birds take up again their delightful songs. And in the pleasant blossom-filled meadow, to the gentle murmur of leaves and plants, the goatherd sleeps, his faithful dog beside him. To the merry sounds of a rustic bagpipe, nymphs and shepherds dance in their beloved spot when spring appears in splendor. Marvin Hamlisch playing Scott Joplin's Solace introduces our jazz music news. It's entitled A Mexican Serenade for Piano. This is written by Blair Johnson and published in AllMusic.com. Scott Joplin's 1909 Solace is a wonderful example of musical hybrid. Joplin was, of course, one of the kings of ragtime music. But here is something that he himself described as, quote-unquote, a Mexican serenade for piano. Certainly not a true rag style. This is a four-minute gem of a habanera, which, as one might divine from the word, has roots in Havana. There is also in Solace something of the tango form, which, though distantly related to an African folk dance tradition, is more recently of the same Latin extraction as the habanera. Solace is, then, a true musical mishmash. It is also a very lovely piece of Americana, familiar to millions by the way of the 1973 movie The Sting. As happens in Joplin's rags, several catchy little tunes, only a few of which were used by Marvin Hamlisch in The Sting, work together to make up Solace. Fans of Georges Bizet's Carmen are invited to sit back, listen to Solace, and enjoy the same gently rocking habanera rhythm as is heard throughout the Frenchman's famous habanera. It is remarkable that a piece of music exists that allows us to draw a comparison between Georges Bizet and Scott Joplin. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Your Brain on Music, a popular class breaks down how our brains respond to music. This is published by Pegasus, the magazine of the University of Central Florida. Since 2006, two UCF professors, neuroscientists, Kiminobu Sugaya and world-renowned violinist Ayako Yonatani have been teaching one of the most popular courses in the Burnett Honors College, Music and the Brain. Explores how music impacts brain function and human behavior, including by reducing stress, pain, and symptoms of depression, as well as improving cognitive and motor skills, spatial-temporal learning, and neurogenesis, which is the brain's ability to produce neurons. Sugaya and Yonatani teach how people with neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's also respond positively to music. That article concludes with a section called Did You Know? Use it or lose it. We are all born with more neurons than we actually need. Typically, by the age of 8, our brains do a major neuron dump, removing any neurons perceived as unnecessary, which is why it's easier to teach language and music to younger children. If you learn music as a child, your brain becomes designed for music, Sugaya says. Oldest instrument, according to National Geographic, a 40,000-year-old vulture bone flute is the world's oldest musical instrument. Hairy cells. The ear only has 3,500 inner hair cells compared to the more than 100 million photoreceptors found in the eye. Yet our brains are remarkably adaptable to music. Sing along. In the Sesotho language, the verb for singing and dancing are the same, hobina, as it is assumed the two actions occur together. Sing seasonal songbirds. Sugaya has also conducted neurological studies on songbirds. His research has found that canaries stop singing every autumn when the brain cells responsible for song generation die. However, the neurons grow back over the winter, and the birds learn their songs over again in the spring. He takes this as a sign that music may increase neurogenesis in the brain. Stevie Nicks singing her 1975 signature song, Rhiannon, with Fleetwood Mac, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article entitled Stevie Nicks, Wisdom from the First Woman to Make It into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Twice. This is written by Rob Sheffield, published in Rolling Stone magazine, March 2019. Stevie Nicks has the only kind of BDE that matters, belladonna energy. Fleetwood Mac's Gold Dust Woman is adding yet another sequin to her top hat this spring by going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a solo artist, 21 years after she got enshrined with the Mac. She's the first woman inducted twice, as she puts it, at the ripe and totally young age of 70. She's also touring the world with Fleetwood Mac after their surprise split with Lindsey Buckingham. As eloquent and witty as ever, Nicks went deep with Rolling Stone for an epic late-night chat about her 50 years as a rock goddess, discussing love, poetry, platform boots, her closeness with Tom Petty, how Stand Back makes her Miss Prince, and the joy of sharing a band with her friend Christine McVie. Rock on, Queen. Well, congratulations on the Hall of Fame. How is it different going in the second time? It's 22-0. 22 guys who've gone in twice and 0 women. Eric Clapton is probably in there 22 times already. Maybe this will open the doors for more women to fight to make their own music. You're one of the few rock stars with both a band and a solo career. Well, my solo career is much more girly girl than Fleetwood Mac is. I never wanted a solo career. I just had so many songs. To this day, I write all the time. I have a poem that I've written about Game of Thrones, and I have a really beautiful poem that I'm writing about Anthony Bourdain. You were a pioneer to a female rock star when there was virtually unknown. I was a female rock star in a band with another female rock star, which was totally cool. If I had been the only girl in Fleetwood Mac, it would have been very different. People said, "Does Christine need another girl in the band?" I said, "I hope she likes me." And she did really like me. We got Mexican food and we laughed and went, "This is going to be great." Then I did the Gemini thing where you're two different people. Let's give Stevie her solo career without breaking up one of the world's biggest bands. I hope that inspires the women musicians out there. Who were the women singers who inspired you most as a kid? I started singing in fourth grade, R&B, the Shirelles, the Supremes, and the Shangri-Las, all those amazing songs Carole King wrote. When I first listened to the Fleetwood Mac recording of Dreams, I said, "There's that little girl that was singing along to the Supremes." Right now, women are changing the world and changing music like never before. What was it like when you first joined a band? Well, I met Lindsay in 1966. 2 years later, I joined his band, and we played all over San Francisco. I got to watch Janis Joplin and Grace Slick, the best school of rock ever. Was it tougher to get a break as a songwriter at first because you were a woman? Well, I didn't face a lot of the things that a lot of women have faced. I was very lucky. Christine and I made a pact the day I joined Fleetwood Mac. She and I said, "We will never be treated like second-class citizens. We will never be not allowed to hang out in a room full of intelligent, crazy rock and roll stars, because we're just as crazy and just as intelligent as they are." We promised that we would fight for everything we wanted and get it, that our songs and our music would be equally as good as all the men surrounding us. And it was. You and Tom Petty were close friends. He gave you the star on your top hat, right? He did. And he gave me "Stop Dragging My Heart Around." Had he not given me that song, let me candidly tell you, Belladonna, Nick's 1981 solo debut, might not have been a hit. My biggest sadness about the Hall of Fame is that Tom is not here to enjoy this with me, because he would have been the proudest of anyone. Then you have Stand Back, a real soul song that you recorded with Prince. Well, Prince and I never played that song on stage together, but I feel like Prince is with me. When I'm nervous, I'll talk to Prince. Before I go on, I always say, "Walk with me, Prince." You and Prince both had unique style. You never look or sound like anyone else. I don't put the boots on until right before I walk up to the stage. When my little foot goes into the boot, it's like Cinderella. All of a sudden, I become me. I become 6 inches taller. I walk like an African queen. Halloween is my favorite day, but I never have to wonder, what am I going to be? A witch, of course. Where do you keep all of your shawls, by the way? I have my shawl vault. They're all in temperature-controlled storage. I'm trying to give my shawls away, but there's thousands of them. If I ever write my life story, maybe that should be the name of my book. There's enough shawls to go around. Finally, in local music news, we have this. Don Quixote, North Carolina Symphony Concert upcoming this weekend, April 5 and 6, 2019. Guest artist Zul Bailey on cello and Roberto Diaz viola join the NC Symphony to portray the fantastical misadventures of literature's favorite befuddled knight and his loyal sidekick, the charming musical vignettes of Don Quixote, and the wistful elegance of the Walton Cello Concerto will be recorded live for the North Carolina Symphony's next album. Grant Llewellyn is the conductor. That's coming up Friday and Saturday this week in April 5 and 6 at 8 p.m. in my Mandy Concert Hall, Raleigh. So go to ncsymphony.org or phone 919-733-2750 for additional details and ticket information. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1985 that an estimated 5,000 radio stations around the world simultaneously played the same song, Why? And I played a snippet from that song, We Are the World, as a hint. Well, the purpose of simultaneously playing that song had nothing to do with Farm Aid, the end of any war, or bringing down the Berlin Wall. The correct answer was answer C, to highlight the need for world cooperation in solving hunger problems in Africa. As noted in songfacts.com, this was a benefit single for victims of famine in Africa. It raised over $60 million, which was distributed to Ethiopia, Sudan, and other impoverished countries. Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie wrote this song, and Quincy Jones produced it. This talented trio was perfect for the job. Quincy Jones was the hottest producer around, and Richie had written songs that went to number one on the Hot 100 each of the previous 7 years. We Are the World made it 8. Michael Jackson had the biggest album of 1984 with Thriller, produced by Jones. The USA for Africa project began as an idea Calypso singer Harry Belafonte had for a benefit concert. Richie got Stevie Wonder involved, and from there, word got out and many members of the music industry signed on to help. So, who was in this thing? Well, the stars who sang included Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, James Ingram, Billy Joel, Tina Turner, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Willie Nelson, Al Jarreau, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, Steve Perry, Daryl Hall, Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Bob Dylan, and Ray Charles. The song reached number one in the U.S. and elsewhere throughout the world. And the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1949 that a famous musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein debuted on Broadway. What was the name of that Broadway hit? Was it A, Oklahoma, B, The Sound of Music, C, South Pacific, or D, The King and I? Correct answer is answer C, South Pacific. As noted in theaterhistory.com, the story for Rodgers and Hammerstein's 1949 musical, South Pacific, is drawn from a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by James A. Minchner, entitled Tales of the South Pacific, which dealt largely with the issue of racism. It is considered by most critics to be among the greatest musicals of the 20th century. The original Broadway production won 10 Tony Awards, including all 4 acting awards, and many of its songs went on to have a life of their own outside of the musical, including Some Enchanted Evening, I'm Gonna Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair, Valley High, and Happy Talk. It inspired a 1958 film adaptation and has enjoyed numerous successful revivals. So let's close out with some happy talk from that 1949 musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.